Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon. This is Jody Lowe with Leadership Lowdown, powered by You and Improved. Leadership Lowdown is a radio series dedicated to shining a spotlight on Valley business leaders and sharing the real stories behind their rise to the top. Also, the truth about what it takes to really succeed in life and business. And we're here to uncover these leaders' journeys. That would be the pitfalls and the victories and all of the heartaches and triumphs that come in between. And today I am thrilled to be sitting across from two gentlemen that I really admire and have had the pleasure of knowing. Some for a very long time, some for the other for many years. Mr. Tom Hatton, the CEO of Mountainside Fitness. Welcome.
Thank you. So glad to have you here.
And then Russ Yelton, who has his own company called, Russ Yelton & Associates, I believe it is now.
That's it. Thank you.
Awesome. And the former CEO of Pinnacle Transplant Technology. So welcome. Glad to have you both here today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So for both of you, we love to make this just a fun conversation to learn a little bit more about your experience. I know both of you have had tremendous successes in terms of just knowing you and also reading about your bios and backgrounds and following you over the years. It's really tremendous what both of you have created and built and done both in the Valley and outside of the Valley. So Tom, let's start with you and learn a little bit more about your journey, because if anybody has lived in Arizona, they're pretty familiar with what you have created, which is certainly a phenomenon. So tell us a little bit about Mountainside today. And then of course, we'll have to take the journey back.
Well, today, boy, journey back would take a while.
Yeah.
today we're a 16 club chain with, we just went over 85,000 active members
and
1,400 employees. It's busy times. It's really fun. It feels like almost we're just starting because of all the new technology and the things that are happening in the fitness industry.
Yep.
So it feels fresh, but looking back, it's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. So 16 years ago, I think your first club, if I remember correctly, because I was working in advertising and that's how we met one another many years ago. You had your first club in Ahwatukee, if I remember correctly, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ahwatukee in 1991 in a little shopping center called Mountainside Plaza.
Oh my gosh, hence the name. Yes. Wow. So that's how it was all born. There's the big story behind Mountainside. I love it.
Science project behind the name.
Right. And you started it in college. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was 22.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And so what was the impetus to that? Because I know for many an entrepreneur, it's, you know, some life dream and vision. But you were fairly young. Did you know as a child, hey, I'm going to start a business, or I love the fitness industry, or how did this all happen?
You know, actually, no. In fact, the fitness industry back, if we all can remember back in 1991, was really, you know, Jane Fonda workouts, jazzercise, and some world, you know, some Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Hey, she's looking pretty good at 80. Did you see her? I'm like, wow, this lady's like unbelievable.
Yeah, she's timeless, right? But so it really wasn't the industry I thought anything about. I was a baseball player in high school, wanted to be in college. When that didn't work out, I was going to be a teacher and a coach like my father was in high school. And just literally one day I woke up and I had this crazy idea to say, hey, what if I started my own small little gym? With no more background than that idea. That was it.
Wow. So no MBA in business background launching this bad boy. It was just...
Microeconomics at MCC was as deep as I went in business.
Yeah. That's awesome. So take us back. What was it like? How did you get started? I mean, the idea came and then what?
The idea was what just fueled me. The thought of, you know, maybe doing fitness my way, which is different, you know, certainly than anything at the time. It was just a different time in fitness. And then the excitement of trying to figure out how to do it. The first location was small. It was about 4,500 square feet, the size of a basketball court was the whole club. But it was unique to try to figure out how do I raise money for equipment? How much money did I have? At the time, it was just like $2,000.
Right.
Got a loan from a Tempe Schools Credit Union for 15. My parents co-signed, and then a family friend, another 15. And that was it. I was off and running.
That is
$32,000.
Awesome. That is awesome. So you secured your location.
I did.
And obviously with some startup money, some seed money to get it going. If I remember correctly, because I've heard you speak at some events in the past, but if I remember correctly, you were doing everything from like welding equipment to washing towels at home. So tell us all about this because that's the fun and the journey of the entrepreneur.
I had a great roommate at the time, Mike, who was an awesome welder. And we were trying to figure out how to afford the equipment and stuff. So some of it I bought used, some few was new, and the rest we built. So he would weld it, we powder coated it, and I'd polster it, and that became our free weight benches and Olympic benches and so forth. Everything else was used. We did all the interior stuff ourselves. My father and me painted the place. My grandfather helped hang the mirrors. He was a glazer from Minnesota. So he came down and helped. My sister did the logo. It was really a family affair and everything that we did to get the thing open in the first place.
Yep.
It was amazing. It was really fun.
I bet. And so it started there. And you open the doors, you're ready to go. What did you do to bring people in, let them know about this brand new kind of fledgling company? How did that start?
Well, it was really word of mouth helped. But I went around literally door to door. I when I wasn't doing the tenant improvement stuff in there, Russ is smiling. I'm sure you can
remember those days.
Yeah, remember those days. I went door to door and literally just handed out flyers and knocked on doors and say, "Hey, there's a new, hell club." Mm-hmm. That really was a shoebox coming into town, and we had some unique things. And one of those unique things was going to be free towel service, which was a little bit unique because we didn't have a washer and dryer there. So I would do all the laundry at, midnight, every night for a year and a half until I could afford a washer and dryer to put in this facility.
I love that.
Yeah,
that is so great. I mean, talk about grit, it's just awesome. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So you're washing towels at, 3 a.m.
and
getting it all ready for the next day. What was it like? How'd you find your employees? Because this wasn't, a background or a family business or something that you knew. So how did that all transpire?
I think organically we created a culture. I was so young, and a lot of the people that I hired at that time were actually older than me, especially if they had to do a 4 a.m. shift or something like that. They just had to have a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think together we just figured out what our brand of fitness would be, whether it was the free towel service. We started doing what we call membership appreciation days once a month. And I would go bring in a keg and pizza.
Oh my gosh. Because that goes really well with fitness.
I thought it was perfect, right? It's nothing better than seeing somebody in a red Solo cup on the back on the, Smith machine, drinking a beer.
Oh my gosh. It's the reward for all the hard work, right?
That's it. It was all free to everybody. Family came in, kids came in, they ran around. Nobody worked out, but everybody just hung out and drank beer and ate pizza.
That's great.
Made us survive. I think that was the candle that lit us.
That's awesome. So how long did you have just the single location before expansion started?
About 2 years.
So you kind of nurtured that.
Got an SBA loan for my second one.
Yeah.
And then that really got me into banking and started figuring out how to get loans in real estate, and off we went.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And did you feel like your sort of naivety and ignorance, if you will, take it in the right context, was really what helped you in a sense, or did you find it to be a hindrance? Because you said you were surrounded by a lot of, folks that had a lot of business knowledge and had been in the entrepreneurial space. But was it the ignorance that was sort of like a benefit, maybe?
Yeah, you say ignorance is bliss. It was absolutely bliss because I was just fueled on the next thing. What can I figure out? How can I get through tomorrow? Can I be open a year? Okay, what about 2 years? What about this loan? What about that new program? So I was just learning on the job. And if I made a mistake, it was out of effort, not because I just didn't know. And then if I realized it, I just put it in the memory bank and went on.
Just kind of learn and keep on going. And you probably learn more from those mess ups and mistakes and failures as we all do. Not that relates to anyone else in the room ever, right? learned a time or two.
Shoot, you bet. I think really where education probably hindered me and lack thereof was really as we started to grow in the fourth or fifth year, where I had to be a little bit more surgical and understand things, the balance sheet more and all those, just the flow of cash and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's where it hurt me and cost me more mistakes than just the grunt work in the beginning.
Got it.
That was all effort.
Yeah. Because you had the sweat equity and you had the willpower and you're young and hungry and ready to go. But sometimes then it's like, oh, wait, we're in a different phase in our business. I gotta tune up the skills here. So
yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. And then, it went from one for 2 years. And then what was the expansion like? How did that go?
It was slow, but sure. As about the mid 90s came, real estate became my partner and stayed that way really through 2008. I used the owner occupied theory with SBA loans to create the ability to buy land and to build the building. Since I had I was the anchor of a shopping center or the major, just the only box, I was able to get really good financing.
Yeah.
And I just would take all the money that we made from the clubs. I would just pump it into the next loan, so to speak. And I built my real first one out of the ground in Ahwatukee in 1996. And then took that, leveraged it to the next one and the next one. And that's the way the growth went. Slow but sure. About every 2 years, I would buy dirt, build another building.
Yep. Wow. And so 16 today.
16 clubs, yes.
Wow. And 85,000 members. Did I read that right?
85.
That's a lot of members. So it's a different landscape today than, the early 90s. What's going on today? Because there's so many different forms of fitness and styles and types. And there's anything and everything. So what does that mean? Have you had to change a lot, or has your model changed, or not really? Or
yeah, just I think it had to. Yeah. I think if you're not progressing, you're dying. You just don't know when the date is.
Yeah
really. And, you know, in any kind of business. And for us, and certainly in fitness, it became more mainstream and you started to see things change, whether it was the economy that created the low-end box type of $10 a month membership, just big fitness centers.
Yep.
Or the selector, you know, selector yoga studios, the bar studios, the cycle studios, something like that. And then, of course, Orange Theories of the world.
Yep.
So all those things, I think, added
to
the actually fitness landscape because it educated people and it gave people options,
yep.
but also created more competition for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it forced us to either be progressive and think about how we want to design our boxes mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. live in our world. And compete with theirs.
Yeah. And so how do you set yourself apart today from all the options?
I think we've learned really well how to play the top of the middle.
Okay.
Because there's been a separation in my big box world, so to speak, with 40,000 footers with LA or something like a Lifetime mm-hmm. compared to a Planet or mm-hmm. in this state, EOS. We want to make sure that we're going to create as much value, slam as much into our boxes as you can possibly imagine for the dollars. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you should be paying more because of what we're giving you, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's yet close enough in price point to my low competitors, my low dollar competitors.
Yep.
But there's so much more in value. It separates us.
Yep.
Then we start to throw in the extra programs that are, you know, our small studio competitors do. And we feel like we've got a pretty good mix that we kind of live alone at the top of the middle.
Yeah. I think it's living at the top of the middle is perfect because when I, you know, I've been a member of Mountainside for years now. I don't even know how many years, but a lot of years. but yeah, it's definitely that you've got that the smoothie bar and the spin classes and the yoga and all those things that you can find at individual studios, but then it's all under one roof, but it's not necessarily competing with the high, super high tier, you know, so it's got kind of this, like you said, top of the middle space that I think you've branded yourself perfectly for. So it's been beautiful to watch as a member, but it's also as I watch new ones pop up, I'm like, go Tom, go. So it's exciting for you.
That.
So what do you see moving forward? You're at 16 locations now. Is the goal to keep that expansion and that rate of growth going?
Or? I think it's going to be opportunity based. Mm-hmm. You know, I never had this plan to say, oh, we're going to be a 30 club chain mm-hmm. and I want to take over the Southwest or anything. I think it's based on the opportunities that present themselves that fit our demographics.
Right.
So we don't put ourselves in a risk position that we're just growing for the sake of growth.
Mm-hmm.
That we make sure we manage our product inside the box to say, okay, we are the best we can be possibly of what we're doing today.
Yep.
If another opportunity presents itself, an infill spot, something new because the valley's grown on the exterior areas, mm-hmm. then we'll go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And for you, I know, I'm sure there's a lot of people being that you've grown up here, I think your whole life pretty much, right? I know you're born in Minnesota. Did I get that right?
For a minute and a half, yes.
Oh, really? Yeah, a blink of an eye and then you were here?
Yes.
Yeah, so a native. We'll go with native. So as a lot of people look to you as a just a local CEO who certainly, you know, built it from the ground up and seen tremendous success, what are those kind of things that you would like pass on to that next generation of folks that have that young gut dream and instinct to start their own thing?
You know, I don't want to sound cheesy on it, but I really, you know, we talked about it earlier, Jody, mm-hmm. Ignorance is bliss and mm-hmm. effort is everything. And I think if you are determined to say, I might not know that mm-hmm. answer, but I'll go figure it out. And along the way, I'm not going to stop. There's nothing's going to stop me.
Yep.
Those things will just happen.
Yeah.
And you're just going to get roadblocks like you cannot imagine, things that you'll never expect that are going to come your way. If you don't stop giving in or going forward, then I think it will be successful.
Yep.
I think people just have to feel like they can keep going no matter what.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I think got me through to the next phase of business was just that I'm not going to stop. It's not going to stop.
It just wasn't even an option.
It wasn't an option, no.
Yep. And nope. I love that. That's the grit.
Yeah.
Back to the grit. So for you, what was the hardest challenge you've been through? I mean, it's been many years now. It's been a couple decades plus. So what's the biggest challenge that you had to overcome in this whole growth journey of yours?
Wow. I would say we got to the height of the combination of real estate and actual business for myself mm-hmm. in 2008, mm-hmm. ironically, you know, the story turns into next, right?
Yeah.
So we grew, and in Arizona, as if you had real estate, it was like gold and you could just trade it for more gold. And that's the way I built the company without partners or investors. That's what I used.
Mm-hmm.
When that crash happened, I was stuck with a real estate component that really wasn't the driver of the business. The actual health clubs drove everything by this time,
right?
But they were the anchor at this point, you know, not the boat of how we would go forward. So when that came crashing down, I spent the better part of 2 to 2.5 years unwinding real estate so it wouldn't affect the operations because they were so closely tied.
Sure.
Yeah. That was mindlessly difficult.
Oh, I bet. Yes. I bet. And did you get rid of some locations then along the way? Is that?
Yeah, well, yeah. We ended up doing it. I think the big thing was we had expanded into Colorado in 2008. We had three clubs going in Colorado, and we had more on the way, and they all came crashing down because all the extra deals that were coming our way in Colorado stopped. Mm-hmm. The deals that we were under construction blew up. The banks were taken over by the feds that were funding the landlords that had the banks who are now going under. And it was just this domino effect that we were left holding the ball. Go, wait a minute. We just wanted to shoot baskets, man. We didn't want to own the team.
Right. How'd we get here? Yeah, right.
This is not fun.
Yeah.
So we figured out how to sell the court.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of back our way out of Colorado, so to speak, mm-hmm. with our heads held high and come back and just focus, kind of clean up all the real estate issues here, actually work with the developers who were kind of tied to the banks, and we were their anchor. Mm-hmm. Said, hey, let's all fix these things together. We were 10 for 10 in those deals, and we were able to kind of brush our hands off and go, okay, it's 2012. And we opened back up as far as our growth mm-hmm. with Chase Field, with the Diamondbacks and Maricopa County Sports Authority. So that was kind of our like, hey, We made it.
We're back. Yeah.
We're back. Yeah. Growing.
And now you're strictly Arizona.
We're strictly Arizona.
And is that the plan?
I would say for now, but I'll never say never.
Yeah. Yeah. Like any good entrepreneur, never say never.
Doors never close.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exciting, though. Yeah, and you are certainly the Arizona homegrown leader. So it's wonderful to see. As you went on this journey, was there a mentor or somebody that kind of took you under their wing, or someone you aspired to and looked up to, or?
Yeah, I did. I had a gentleman come in, probably about 4 years into my club chain. So my second club had just opened. His name is Don McIntyre. He's not with us anymore. And he was, I would say, about my grandfather's age. I think he was in the Civil War at one point. I mean, Don had been through everything. He was a bomber pilot in World War II. He had just owned FET manufacturing companies, had sat on boards, more boards than I, you know, years that I was alive. He was just amazing. And he was not afraid to tell me the way I should be doing things and stuff. And we put together a little bit of a board, not an actual official board, mm-hmm. but kind of an unofficial board. And he led that. And he taught me more things in the 2.5 years that he led me than most of my career. And he was amazing. He would yell, he would praise, he would cuss at me, get everybody out of the room. What are you doing? You know, and it was amazing. And he was just amazing. For me to be a mentor.
And did he seek you out because he just saw you and just wanted to help and support you? Or did you find him and say, oh, I work with me, or I want to learn from you?
He, a mutual friend recommended us to meet. And I think we went out to lunch one time, and he really reminded me of my grandfather, my mom's dad. And he just was hardened, but smart and real. And he'd just been through everything. So it was like, my job was to shut up and listen, you know, and nod, you know?
Yeah. When you get that gift, you just sort of go with it.
Absorb everything. And that's all I would do, was absorb it. And I think that was a magical time for us, because I think it really dictated the way we were going to go for the future. It really
Absolutely. Yeah. Was there anything in particular that he said, or something that just like resonates, like whether it's a phrase or a story of something like that just really hit home for you?
Yeah. Cash is king and debt is the devil. was the bet. It was the thing. Rush, you probably can say, right? And really, he would say, don't grow, especially when he came to me a little bit. It was, don't grow for the sake of growing, because I always use this term, we were getting to be the prettiest girl at the dance, and everybody, we were having our dance card filled, and it was kind of intoxicating. Go, yep. Yeah. Oh yeah. We'll do that corner. We can grow over there.
Yep.
And he would say, how much have you concentrated on how your product is? Inside, can you tell me that your four walls are secure inside, that you've done everything with your product? And I would look at him and he'd go, then there's your answer. Stop growing. Make sure you concentrate inside the walls. And we started to look inward, and that really changed the dynamics of the way the business was going to move forward and being progressive in its nature.
Right. Well, I love that, concentrate on inside the walls. That's awesome. That's great. When you look back now, after all of the years of success and trials and tribulations, of course, along the way, is there anything that you wish you would have done differently, or was it all just part of the journey for you?
Oh, there's so much. There's not enough time in this decade for me to go, what I wish I would have done differently. Yeah. I say this when I've talked to schools and so forth, is I wish I would have understood to listen to the numbers. I think in business, the numbers are always talking to you in one way or another. Mm-hmm. People can spin them. They can make them feel one way or another. But if you're really listening to what it is, they're telling you the story of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And if you just understand that, a lot of that will just kind of bake out into what your plans can be for the future, and you don't get emotional about it.
Yep.
Those type of things. And I, looking back, every time in the times where I didn't listen to the numbers, mistakes followed.
Those were the times.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Wow. And you, if I understand correctly, you have a new book coming out. Is that right?
Yes.
Awesome. Tell me about that.
It's called Dream On. And it's being published by a group out of actually England through a co-publisher in New York. And hopefully it'll be out by the beginning of the summer. And it's really just the journey that my career has taken me really through starting Mountainside, but all the different things, which are almost too crazy to even talk about, that this journey, actually that dream, created all these different events, situations, and life challenges that had nothing to do really with Mountainside or fitness, but had everything to do with maybe an entrepreneur's career or somebody's life.
Yep.
And, you know, 26 years of doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And are you a member? Do you work out? Are you a product of your product?
You know what? Every fourth day, whether I need it or not.
There you go. Yeah. I love it. Well, that's awesome. Well, I don't know if you've heard the show before, but there's something fun that I love to incorporate. So Russ is going to get a little bit of a cheater information here. But there's some questions that I love to ask each of our guests because, I like to have fun. And I think this is about being real and authentic in business and in life. And I don't know, that's to me the most fun part of the journey. And there's a TV show called Inside the Actor Studio.
Oh, yeah.
And they ask a bunch of questions. Are you familiar with what getting at? Okay. Well, so they've asked all these wonderful actors and actresses over the years these same questions. And I just feel like, well, we need to hear from CEOs and their opinions on these things. So if you're okay, I'm going to rattle off some questions. I want to hear your instinctive answer. So, okay. So, Mr. Tom Hatton, what is your favorite word?
Desire.
Awesome. So what is your least favorite word?
Failure.
Desire and failure. I was going to say go hand in hand. They don't go hand in hand at all. Absolute opposites. Love it. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Long answers. Creatively is seeing a vision of what I want something to be,
mm-hmm.
and then making that happen.
Awesome. Have you had that outside of Mountainside?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
I love it. So what turns you off?
Quitting.
What sound or noise do you love?
Wow. What sound or noise? Laughter.
Awesome. I thought you might say like barbell slamming on the ground or something.
I can get annoyed. No, laughter is it. Number one for sure.
Awesome. So what sound or noise do you hate? That could be the barbells.
Horn tonking. Yes.
Awful. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's awful. What profession other than your own, would you like to attempt?
Oh, I would have loved to have been a fighter pilot.
Oh.
No doubt about it.
Neat. I thought you were going to say a coach or
something. Oh, no. Fighter pilot. Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. You have your pilot's license?
I do.
Awesome. Yes. But a fighter pilot. That's quite a thing. So is it still going to happen?
I'm too late for that game. I can always just dream.
Exactly. Dream on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. What profession would you not like to do? Long pause.
Computer programming.
I'm with
Russ
you on
is,
that.
He's shaking his head, yes.
Yeah, Russ is like, no, thank you. So if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome.
Nice. That's a good way to be brought in. I love it. Well, I so appreciate your candid answers and your authenticity as always, my friend. And I'm going to bounce over to Russ, but please chime in. This is all about fun and conversation. You good staying for a bit?
Yep.
Awesome. So Mr. Russ Yelton. So I know a lot of people know you here locally and in the Valley and nationally for all of the success you've not only had, but helped a local company here have. So as we all maybe know, Pinnacle Transplant Technologies has grown. From the years that I've known you, I've seen this 20, 30 person company become this 100 plus company. Yep. And you were the CEO for that company up until October of last year.
That's correct.
Yeah. So tell us, I want to get back into a little bit how you built that and everything that's happened over there with the incredible team. But tell us what you're doing today, because I know it's a little bit of a departure, but still in the same realm.
Yeah. I've always been inspired by economic development and entrepreneurship. It's just always been something that's fascinated me. So Yelton and Associates, we work with municipalities on building out verticals, whether it's a biotech focus, other focus, or, you know, they're looking to do incubators, co-work, accelerators, just a lot of years of experience in that. And really just, you know, working around entrepreneurs because, you know, you just never know what they're going to walk in with next.
Yeah.
We just evaluate about 500 companies a year. And so it would be phenomenal just to see the range. And, you know, sure. whether it's, you know, I wrote down this idea on the back of a napkin, or I've got my Series A, I need a Series B, you know, and all the fun stuff in between.
Right.
So just a lot of fun.
Yeah. So is it the creativity, that part of it that is inspiring to you, or?
It is. And just, you know, just as Tom was saying, just the dedication and just, you know, you see people just go and go and go. And, you know, sometimes you have to say, slow down. And just like my mentor did, you know, he said, Russ, growth is good, but it kills a lot of companies. And if you, again, as Tom said, I'm going to redo his interview, but
yeah, no,
you know,
it's all good. Jump in.
If you don't understand the numbers, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they'll kill you
quickly.
But, you know, got to see lots of fun companies. And really, as when I moved into the Valley from Asheville, North Carolina, first in Flagstaff, dealing more in the medical device area arena, we're really looking to improve human health. And I think that's something that's just been very passionate about through over the years, serving on the board of AZ Bio and now the Healthcare Impact Foundation, just really trying to improve lives.
Yeah. And where did that passion for improving lives and technology and biomed, where did all of that come from? Is this something since you were a little boy in North Carolina, or what inspired this?
Well, I've always loved entrepreneurship. I mean, when I was in middle school, I was the kid in the back of the bus selling you candy to take your lunch money. I was doubling my money.
Nice.
You know, I had my first job when I was 9, picking up range balls at the golf course by my house.
So it's
just always been like, driven to do things.
Yeah.
First person in my family to ever go to college. So it was
awesome.
Like, let's go and make a difference. And, you know, got into incubation in a really weird kind of way back in Asheville, and it just stuck.
Yeah.
And just gone from there.
Well, and it's interesting too, because in, you know, just knowing you, but then also, you know, reading your bio, I've never seen a bio that is so built. Like, one thing is it's like the most perfect stair step of experiences, and the boards and the memberships and the things that you've chaired. It's like, oh my gosh, it's literally been this has been really all consuming your whole life. This biotech incubator startup, working with these entrepreneurs. I mean, that's really been what you've done your entire career. It's not like these strange departures. It's really been the focus. So yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So when you look back, I know that most recently, like I'd mentioned, Pinnacle Transplant was where you'd been for your most recent stint, and incredible leadership over there. And I'm sure that you are missed, but you're also still very involved, if I understand
correctly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I stayed on the board. Pinnacle was one of 62 companies we had in our portfolios across Arizona that we were working with. And I remember when they applied, my VP in Phoenix said, you need to look at this one. It's a little different. And I'm like, well, what are they doing? And he goes, they're processing human tissue. It's like, okay, that's a little different. I better do some research. And, you know, they process human cadaveric tissue. So easiest way to ask, if you've ever heard of a guy called Peyton Manning?
Mm-hmm.
So spinal fusion. So Pinnacle, we take from the iliac crest down, and we make grafts out of that, recover ACLs and tendons, and then also process amniotic fluid from live C-section births to make regenerative products. So it's
that's
really taking, at the end of the day, the greatest gift anyone can give, the gift of themselves, and using that to help someone else. And from a donor, you know, we will get between 150 to 200 grafts. But there's that many lives that you can have a positive impact on.
From a single donor.
Single donor.
Wow.
So it's one of those things where if you can't get up and be excited about what you're doing, you know, the passion's not there. But it really was. Great team. And we scaled very nicely. And now in 19 countries.
It's amazing.
Distributing around the world.
It's amazing.
And just
And it was
great team.
It was basically like four of you, if I understand correctly, that kind of got things off the ground. Is that right?
The founders had gotten it off the ground. It was you know, about 3 years running, you know, starting to scale, had about 20 associates at the time. And the founders realized, we know the science, but, you know, the business scaling piece, we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And so our COO's wife was working at Gateway Community College, where CEI is another incubator we had done. And she came home one day and said, there's a thing called an incubator. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing. It might be chickens, but you should go check it out, you know, see what it is. And, you know, they came in and, you know, very humble, great guys. And, you know, they came in and we had them in for about a year. And I was creating a C-level program at that time to put C-level executives into our companies that were scaling. Many of the entrepreneurs we worked with make great CTOs, not necessarily good CEOs, especially as the company changes and you grow. And that's not a bad thing. You know, chairman of the board's a great title.
Yeah.
Sometimes a lot better than CEO going into dealing with that.
Yeah.
And so I was actually an interim CEO for them, being the first out of the gate to do this new program. And lo and behold, a few months in, they convinced me to come in and
stay a while.
We started building it from there, and it's grown into the great company it is today.
That's amazing. And then they're doing such phenomenal work. What would you say was really the thing that catapulted that growth during your tenure there?
Oh, good question. To me, it's all about people. You got to get the right people, not only on the bus, but in the right seats on the bus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did lots of different programs. In fact, it was interesting. Our average age was 27 years old. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different demographic that you're working with. And so, you know, helping them understand what are the tools you need to be successful. One of the challenges when you're growing at 30% a year is that the tools you use at 20 doesn't work at 40, doesn't work at 60, doesn't work at 80. Mm-hmm. So you're always regrowing your processes and your things. And, you know, that was one of our challenges, but we just had really good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we had fun with it too. You know, there was a reason we had a social committee. You know, so every 3 months they come up with something new to do.
That's fun.
You know, we did ball games and different things, and I kept kind of nudging community.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great. So they came in and they said, we're doing a clothing drive for the Phoenix Rescue Mission. I'm like, spot on. That's awesome. So I come in the next day and there's 8 huge boxes in the lobby and there's only like 60 of them. I'm like, what's this? And they're like, that's for the clothing drive. And I'm like, love the heart, guys, but you know, I don't know about this. And they said, oh no, we have a method. Well, their method was for every 5 items you brought in and put in the box, got a slip of paper. You got to write down on the slip of paper the name of the executive you want to see go in the dunk tank they brought in. They filled 24 boxes of that stuff.
Gosh,
yeah. And just
brilliant.
Last summer, donated over 8,000 bottles of water to the homeless shelter. So,
Isn't that fantastic?
Being involved in the community is just really, really important.
That's unbelievable. And it's amazing too, because you talked about the people. You know, when you put a group of people together and just some creative minds, it doesn't matter the title you hold or the seat you fill. It's, you know, you get those creative minds and people thinking out of the box and doing things differently. And look what happens. That's incredible.
Yep. No, exactly. And in our executive team, that was the thing. It was flat. You know, I had the CEO title, but I would come in, especially early on, and go, hey, guys, we need to do this. And they just look at me and roll their eyes. And
yeah.
Like, okay, what don't I know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Educate me. What? And then, you know, on business stuff, vice versa. So it was a very good working group.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that kind of growth, because like I said, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with you and your phenomenal team over there and with a lot of the training and development. And what I got to witness and be a part of is just been so much growth, but so many magnificent, as you said, many very young people, but coming into a unique environment. I remember taking my first tour thinking, Oh, wow. This is not your typical tour. I mean, it's a little different over there. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, cadavers. It's different. But what would you say with that massive explosive growth you've had over the past few years? What was the secret to, you know, finding the great people, but also retaining them?
Communication, hands down. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the first thing I did when I came in is I put up a suggestion box. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, well, why did you do that? They'll tell us what they think. And I said, well, yeah, that's
that's sort of the point.
Kind of the point. You know, we want to do that. You know, it was really just always soliciting feedback, whether it was quarterly, you know, fat satisfaction surveys. Our whole exec team really had an open door policy. You know, you need to follow what you need to become. You know, but we had our challenges too.
Sure.
You know, where we were adding people too fast, our systems weren't keeping up. And mm-hmm. So I decided at one point I did a listening tour. So I just mixed them up, brought them in 3 to 4 at a time from different departments. And we went through a series of questions. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What can we do better? You know, who are you? How do you fit in? Mm-hmm. And it was phenomenal feedback.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when I said, what are we doing right? They would look at me and go this, because I get to voice my opinion.
Isn't
and so it was
that
just good
awesome.
To let them do that.
That's awesome. Is that something that's a mountainside thing too? Is there a lot of employee engagement with that kind of stuff?
I think that's amazing. I like that listening tour. I'm writing that.
Yeah, Tom's like, I'm taking the pen out on that one.
I think we culminate with what we call our Mountainside Peak Awards at the end of the year. We do a massive kind of like Academy Award meets, you know, a dance party, so to speak. And we definitely highlight the employees / the clubs that in different events and stuff.
It's great.
And the Mountainside Olympics.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think that's great too, because I know, you know, so many of the folks that I've had the opportunity to talk with and work with have said exactly that. I feel valued. I feel heard. I feel a part of something bigger than me. And I think when you are focusing on that in your culture, you know, it speaks to your successes and the growth and how you've kept it. What is next for you with your new endeavor?
You know,
Well, it's not necessarily new. I shouldn't say that because you've had your own entity now for many years. But.
Yeah, we have. You know, I don't know. We're working with a bunch of different municipalities, several startups. I really like the early startup space. Mm-hmm. There's just kind of that passion, that energy. And, you know, I'll probably continue doing that, but latch onto something here at some point.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yep.
But right now, I'm just having fun.
That's good.
Getting a little more golf than I did the last 4.5 years.
Right, so. Right. There's a fist bump going on right now. We've got a couple golfers in the house. I love it. I love it. And for you, you know, coming up in this biotech space and things that evolve and change so quickly, did you have various mentors along the way, or was there someone in particular that, much to Tom's story, was there someone that kind of took you under their wing, or was it?
Yeah, many different ones, but one that sticks in my mind, when I first moved to Flagstaff from Asheville, he was CEO of Mountain Heart, and Michael Zervas, and just incredible guy, but he's always, it's just strategy. Mm-hmm. There's nothing but strategy. Like, he didn't care about the fluff. He didn't care the politics we had to deal with, because, you know, with the incubators, you're dealing with city councils and all that.
Sure.
It's all about strategy. Where are you getting to, and how are you going to get there?
Yeah.
And then holding yourself accountable. Mm-hmm. And so we really ended up incorporating that into our programs. So all of our entrepreneurs, quarterly benchmark reviews, monthly reviews, all the strategy stuff. And, you know, because with all our entrepreneurs that I love, they're a little ADD LS. ADD looks shiny. You know? And it's just like, oh, there's something cool. There's something cool.
Yes. Like, Tom and I are both shaking our heads like, that's not us. No, we don't. Wait, what was that?
Like, dude, you're still on track. You know, you're following the squirrel over here, you know, which can be okay. But when you're really scaling and you're really, you know, it was interesting. One of my employees, one of my VPs told me one day in Flagstaff, he goes, I've noticed a really interesting thing. He said, they go down the hall one day, they're high-fiving because they just spun a piece of human skin and they did that right. Then the next day, their heads are down because they don't know if they're going to make it. It's very true. You know, without that strategic component and, you know, getting behind them, and with our mentor network, we had 100 people in the mentor network, attorneys, CPAs, others doing pro bono time. And you get all that right stuff behind the right entrepreneur. It's phenomenal where they can go.
Yeah.
You know, and then with incubators, it's not a question of, are you going to graduate? It's a question of, when are you going to graduate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can't be a forever thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get the right tools behind them and just get out of the way and watch.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal.
And speaking of getting out of the way, what does it take but also when do you know that it's time to step aside?
It's a good question. I think, you know, there's a certain passion and drive you have.
Mm-hmm.
You see something and it's like, okay, I can contribute. I can put my thumbprint on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you grow it to a certain point. Still fun, doing well, but you just don't have that creativity as much in your head. And for mm-hmm. me, if I lose the creativity piece of what's the next thing I'm developing, next, you know, leadership academy I'm bringing, or, you know, individual professional development plans that we did, you kind of check all the boxes and it's like, well, this is fun,
mm-hmm.
but it's functioning on its own. It's kind of done its thing and, you know, come do the next fun thing and, you know, still stay involved, still support.
Yeah.
But, you know, what can you find next to help change lives?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you, I know, have recently moved and are also quite the foodie. if you're a friend of Russ's and happen to you know, see any of his posts, there's a lot of food involved. So are you a chef? Do you cook, or do you just love to eat out?
No, I just love to eat out.
Do you?
I need to get that gym membership. Actually.
There you go. I know somebody. I know a guy.
I know a guy.
Exactly. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, we enjoy food. I mean, the food scene here is incredible. And if you're in Flagstaff, there's 3 fine dining restaurants. So it's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You were like, I found the Mecca, which, you know, we're growing, but we're certainly not the cultural Mecca of the world. But hey, we're getting there. That's
absolutely
awesome. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, my gosh. That's
any place we need to go if we haven't been? Some
we
hidden
love to
gem?
Go to Wrigley's Mansion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we were actually there last night for a 5-course a wine dinner.
Oh, my gosh. See,
phenomenal.
I love this. I live vicariously through your belly. Oh, I swear. I do. I just can't get enough. I'm like, wow, look at what he's eating now.
Yeah, Chef Christopher has moved up there and just phenomenal food.
I love it. And what do you do for fun besides eating and golfing?
Eat, golf. We like to travel.
Yeah.
I'm volunteering a lot of time right now with different startups and companies and just, you know, just enjoying kind of helping people get to the next stage.
Yeah. Do you get back to North Carolina much?
I do every quarter. Mom would be upset.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and you surprised her recently, didn't you, for her birthday or something?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she had a birthday and she didn't know I was coming in. So they filmed me coming in the house and my brother giving her a cake and the waterworks were on. But
That's awesome.
Cool. So stayed for a few days and then had to come back. So
that's what it's about. Love the family aspect. Absolutely. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, I need to ask you the same questions. So
oh,
I hope
same. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Same questions. Yeah. No, you can't have pre-planned answers, my friend. You got to be off the cuff here. So, Russ, what is your favorite word?
Oh, success.
Love it. And your least favorite word?
Failure.
Pretty much hand in hand again. What turns you on either creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Something that has a positive social impact.
Love it. Love it. Love it. And what turns you out?
People that don't think about the impact of their actions on others.
Got it. Love it. And for you, what is your favorite sound or noise? What do you love?
Jazz music on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, nice. I didn't know you were a big jazz music fan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. So then what sound or noise do you hate?
Rap.
Oh, my God.
It's not a rap guy.
Yeah. You're like, and it is a noise. Oh, my gosh. That's funny. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Professional golfer.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Are you pretty good?
Not too bad.
Yeah. Good. Yep. Good, good, good. And what profession would you... Oh, okay. They're now sharing hand signals. Okay. So tell us what you're doing. What are we talking about, our golf games?
I was hand signaling at Russ what his handicap is.
So got
he
it.
Knew exactly what that meant.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. For the record, it's a six.
Yeah. Nice.
This is very solid. Very
nice.
Solid.
Very solid. Are you a golfer too?
I am.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Where do you like to play?
All over. Arizona Country Club, I go a lot. Yeah. But
it's
yeah.
nice.
That's yeah. awesome. That's awesome. I love it. Where was I? What profession other than your own? Or did we do sound or noise that you hate?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So there we go. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Professional golfer.
Oh, I'm like losing my mind over here today. We got into the golf tangent. And then you guys threw me off with the handicaps. You're like, I just told you, Jody. Okay. I'm back with you. What profession would you not like to do? How's that?
I don't think I'd like to be a doctor.
No.
No, I think having to inform families of bad outcomes would be very difficult
for me. That would be tough. Yeah, absolutely. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Job well done.
Nice. I love it. I love it. Now, if listeners want to find out more, or connect with you and learn more about what you're doing, how do they best find you, Tom and Russ?
Tom at mountainsidefitness.com.
Oh, so that's a tough one. That's a pretty easy one. Yeah. I don't even have to spell a name there. I mean, TOM doesn't get tougher. Awesome. And how about you, Russ? How do they best find you?
Russ at yeltonandassociates.com.
Okay. And Yelton is pretty self-explanatory. Yep. Y-E-L-T-O-N. Awesome. And in closing, I love to know that leadership lowdown, that thing, that one thing that for our listeners who are saying, you know, whether they are at the top of their game, whether they're climbing the corporate ladder, whether they're starting a business, whether they're at the top of creating an empire, whatever it might be, what's leadership lowdown? What's that one tip, that one thing that you feel it's imperative that they know? We'll start with you, Tom.
Confidence in the directions that you're leading the company.
Okay.
Just know where you want to take everybody and understand that you don't have to know all the answers. Mm-hmm. You just have to lead everybody to get the right ones.
Awesome.
That's your job.
Yep.
Know the direction and lead everybody to the right. And then give credit to the people that have given those directions and those answers
sure.
along the way so that everybody goes together to that one common theme, thought, direction.
Awesome. And one question on that while we're just talking about it. What happens if you realize the direction you're leading them wasn't maybe the right one? Then what do you say?
My second favorite word is you be accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work together to go get on the right direction. Because you're never going to necessarily do it all right all the time.
Sure.
You just got to be able to be accountable and pivot mm-hmm. when you don't.
Yep. Perfect. Love it. And how about you, Russ?
I'm going to piggyback on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Always said surround yourself with people smarter than you.
Yep.
You can't know everything. And if you think you do, it's your first mistake.
Yeah.
You know, and on the accountability piece, I think Tom's right there. But I used to tell our associates, it's not a question of if you will make a mistake. It's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
And when you raise your hand and go, hey, that didn't work right.
Yeah.
Fine. You know, we'll fix it. We'll get you the right tools. We'll get the right things.
Yep.
But it's also creating a culture in which people feel comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
They feel comfortable with saying, you know, I messed up, because in the human tissue bank business, you can't afford to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to have the accountability. But and again, I think surround yourself with people smarter than you. Be open to having people look at your strategy and shake their head and go, nope.
Yep.
And here's why. And really listen and internalize it.
Yeah. Have that collaborative input. which obviously you were big at spearheading at Pinnacle. That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank you both so much. I know how busy you both are. I appreciate you making time in your busy schedules to be here and sharing your wisdom with our listeners. I'm sure that they took many nuggets and things that they can not only apply, but kind of chew on and moving forward. That's the wisdom of all of those mentors that sometimes we don't have the pleasure of knowing firsthand or having a chance to sit down with. So I thank you so much for being here. And Russ and Tom, thank you again. Just really appreciate the time. And for absolutely. And for our listeners that aren't familiar, Youn Improved is the sponsor of this incredible Leadership Lowdown series. And for those of you that don't know, we work with companies to align their leadership to really focus on their most important asset, which is their people. So to learn more about Youn Improved, you can reach us at jody@younimproved.com. That's Jody with an I. So you have to spell my name. Mine's a little trickier. Or of course, you can visit us online at youandimproved.com. So thank you both, Russ and Tom, for being here today. And to all of our listeners, make it a great week.